This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at peace. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
So I was in Nolamara for the Vesak ceremony, and there were quite a few people who took refuge in the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, and that just reminded me that is what also meditation is supposed to be, is a refuge. And what refuge? It's a refuge from our thoughts, from this constant commentator inside of our head. And often we like that commentator and we feel, wow, that's me talking there. But sometimes that commentator causes us a lot of trouble, tells us a lot of things in our head that are unpleasant, unkind, and leads to a lot of suffering, to madness. And meditation as a refuge is to have this developing this space between that commentator in the head and the silence that is behind, or it's basically overshadowed by that commentator the whole time. So getting access to that silence gives a completely different perspective to that what's going on in the mind. It's basically not I'm thinking these thoughts. There's basically this step after a while back, and one sees, oh, these are thoughts, and then one sees that I'm not the aspect of, are these wholesome thoughts or are these unwholesome thoughts? And hopefully the meditation developed can do that for you, to give you that refuge, this refuge of this step backwards and calmness, and also this feeling of letting go of a burden. It's not that I'm a meditator, I have to stop thinking. No, it says I have learned to let go a little bit of this burden of constant thought. A completely different perspective as when people try to achieve something with their meditation and then they make this commentator just a little bit louder and a little bit more aggressive. Shut up, watch your breath. Still, 1, 2, 3, butto, 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 butto. And nothing works, and it's just they put this pressure on themselves, and it's just another commentator who is very unkind. So the first thing I try to tell people is, if you want a mind to be more peaceful, you better don't give it an idiot and an asshole, actually, who's telling the mind something. Because if that guy is unpleasant and just another commander and another control freak, you're not going to get peaceful, I guarantee you. You just get more agitated, you're going to hate your meditation, and you ask yourself after some time, what is that all about? That you just created another monster, which has nothing to do with meditation, it's just another construct in the mind who is unpleasant, and we have enough of them already usually in our minds. So please put that effort into dealing with your mind in a kind way. If you're thinking a lot, you can encourage yourself to think less. But do it nicely, and if the mind doesn't want to do it, then you say, okay, mind, you want to think a lot? Go back. Think. No problem. Even if you wanted to meditate. You're not going to push and pull. It's basically this meditator we try to develop has to be the one who is telling the mind in a way that we can, that it feels like, wow, there's somebody there that means well. If we have the feeling after years still that you cannot trust that person who's telling you, oh, sit down and you should meditate more, and now you meditate, now I have to meditate, I haven't meditated for 2 days, and my God, didn't meditate enough. Is that, why is that? There is no ease, there is no attraction in the mind to stillness, because the stillness is still not considered as something beautiful in the mind. And if the mind doesn't perceive it as beautiful, it's not going to work. It's not a force that is going to bring the meditation about. It's this feeling that a burden is coming slowly off your shoulders. It's this appreciation of, wow, I don't have to think right now. How does it feel? And if there is thinking, you know, in that period, it's going to be kind. It's going to be full of goodwill. So you, even if you don't get completely still, you have a good feeling about the meditation, because it sets a time when there's a lot of kindness in your own mind. So you still like it. So that's the approach I would like you to consider for your meditation. You can always try different approaches. You can be a real hard ass and you cut down every thought with a sword. People try that, and if you're playful enough, you can do that. Give it a try. But in the moment you become serious and really aggressive, you see that you're just giving yourself a hard time and you become more uncomfortable. So whatever works for you, but in the end it has somebody you can trust. Because like Acha Rao says so nicely, the bus driver that is not there, but first of all, that bus driver that we perceive to be there is going to take the hands off the wheel, and that's going to be really, really scary. And if it's if a little bit of peace is coming up and we cannot trust in our own mind, that is sort of whatever is happening there, that's fine, because it's just more letting go.
Yeah.
We're used to that already, of less control. And if we're not used to do that in a kind way, then immediately somebody's going to come up and tries to take the steering wheel again, and the whole meditation is going to fall apart. So please put that effort into this kindness of meditation. It doesn't have to be completely still. If it's kind and happy enough, it's going to get still all by itself. And for the new lady, if the mind doesn't know where to go without thinking, you can always go to your breath. Just in and out, it's happening automatically. And you will see, oh, if I concentrate on that, I'm going to control that more. You feel the controller coming up. And that is all right. Just keep that kindness of the mind, keep that up, actually. Control a little bit, and then you can let go, and you just have the assurance that the breath is going to continue if you control it or not. Something to center yourself about. You can make that very, very pleasant and kind as well, just the in-breath and out-breath. Not to hold the mind there, just to give it an opportunity of rest. And if it likes it, then it's going to stay anyway. So that's enough of an introduction. I think we can start now with the meditation. And I talk you a little bit into the meditation like always, and then I'm going to be quiet. But I'm putting the microphone down. I try to speak a little bit up, otherwise I find that too unpleasant.
First point of kindness, sit as comfortable as you can. And comfortable is not being too relaxed, and comfortable is not being too upright. Comfortable is a position of the body where you know in that half an hour that we meditate, you're not going to damage it. Your back is not going to be too bent or too rigid. And your feet are in a comfortable position in front of your chair, not too far apart, not too close together, that it has to feel stable. It feels stable that you don't need muscles to hold the whole thing up. It's just this part of the having a relaxed mind. We have to learn to relax the body as well. If we hold on to tensions in the body, it makes it very, very hard to relax the mind. So we use the body as an object. We go through the body once, starting with our feet, and wriggle a little bit till we know now you're sitting in a position that's good, that's as comfortable as it gets. And go up, see if your knees have the right distance of each other, apart from each other. And then when we come to the upper body, take one deep in-breath. And on the out-breath, you let your shoulders down. And the in-breath tells you as well if you're upright enough that your tummy can come out a little bit, that the whole breathing apparatus has enough space, and you can overdo it a little bit, just really breathe in deeply. For me, then, with the out-breath, everything comes into place. If your hands are lying comfortably on your lap already, then the shoulders will come down, the upper body comes into a position where the breath is comfortable, and the neck and the head follow. And it's just to having a few deep breaths. Now at the end we just check if there's still tension in our face, around our mouth. The eyelids just gently rest. No tension around the eyes, usually the forehead relaxes as well. So now we have a good starting point. It's not going to be 100% comfortable, but that is this first step of kindness. We know nothing is going to happen to that body. Not going to be damaged sitting like that. Still, if you're getting too uncomfortable, you're happy and you're welcome to get up and walk a little bit outside. Do it silently, please. And obviously, you're always welcome to move a little bit. Sometimes it takes time for the body to relax. The whole point is not to put more restraints on the mind now. It's just the time where you don't have to think, my lovely mind. You don't have to figure things out. You just can watch and look into this mind that becomes more silent. See how agitating thoughts can be. Just when it slows down a little bit. And just getting in contact with a relaxed body. And feeling the breath inside of the body going in and out. That is just your little anchor. If the perception goes in different directions, we just become aware of that. We don't have to commentate. We don't have to bring it back anywhere. Just keep this curiosity, kindness up. What happens if I stop doing stuff? Just how interesting how everything rolls on and on without us doing things. if you have the feeling there are too many thoughts going on, speak some encouraging words. You can think, but you don't have to, my lovely mind. You can also rest now and just be. Not having to do anything. The breath is always there for me, going in and out. going to ring the bell 3 times and then we end the meditation for tonight.
Actually, the people in Nolamara, they were 2 days early. We are actually tonight the ones having the real Vesak day because it's a full moon night. And so today is exactly the Vesak day. They were out of tune in Nolamara. So, what does that mean? It means that the Buddha was supposed to be born and got his enlightenment and his death day on the same day. It's probably only because to make it easier not to have too many parties, I guess. Actually, I don't think it all happened on the same day, but who knows, who am I? So, for that occasion, they had the meeting, or we had the meeting in Nolamara Center, and then there was, I don't know, let's say around 30 people who took refuge to become Buddhists. So, and you can do that online now. Isn't that beautiful? So you don't have to show up, you don't have to know anything. You basically have your online request. And then you say that you want to keep the 5 precepts, and then you get a certificate. You're a certified Buddhist. Isn't that beautiful? We live in such a great age. I love it so much. Thank you. And I just ask myself, what are you doing? I'm a Buddhist now. Huh? I'm taking refuge in the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. So I think most of the people, if I'm going to ask them, they won't have an answer for me. It's basically just another ritual, and they have a certificate now that they can put on the wall. So if it doesn't mean much, I mean, sometimes we have to give it a ritual and then it becomes something, but often it just stays that way. You know, it's just another ritual. Another certificate on the wall, or it's another burden on the shoulders. Yeah? Some people, they are very, very eager when they start. Huh? I'm going to keep 5 precepts now. Yeah? I'm not going to steal, I'm not going to lie, I'm not going to kill. And the worst one is always the not taking drugs and alcohol anymore. Yeah? And people really get into their guilt trips. Yeah? And start with it. It's just, I'm a Buddhist now, don't drink alcohol. And then they had a glass of wine, and then, oh, the meditation goes to hell for I don't know how long, actually, because they're evil sinners. So then they treat a training the same way as they treated any other religion before. You either believe it and you follow the rules, or you go to hell. So if that means then becoming a Buddhist, that you just become more unhappy and more have more trouble in your life again, then you're doing something in the extreme. And that's why I wanted to bring up a little bit the middle way, something that I found inspiring in Buddhism, because after doing this business for some time, I see people always going from one extreme to the other. Before that they were fishermen, and now actually they stepped on an ant and they devastated. So, and this getting that right, a lot has to do with the intention, first of all. Intention, what do I trust? What intention do I trust in my own mind, in other people's minds? And then you can see if it's coming from a place we can where it's not right, we feel that immediately. If we feel somebody and we just know it, he's trying to sell me something here. Or he's trying to push me in a certain direction. We feel that force behind it. Immediately there's obviously something that goes wants to go the distance towards that thing or that person. And if we have the intention not to harm beings, we're still going to harm beings. Apart from all the beings we kill with every breath, actually, still we're going to have people we're going to say things to people they don't want to hear. And that's good. That's a good thing. Huh? And now it's getting into this political correctness business. I mean, I just came out of the monastery in the Anagarikas, they had a discussion. And some people, they come to the monasteries and they don't behave. You live in the monastery for free, you don't have to pay when you come to us. And that means you have to follow the 8 precepts, and you have to help out in the kitchen, you have to do your little duties, otherwise please go again. If you can't do that, if that is too much for you, go. Now we have people coming actually, oh yeah, well let me explain actually, I don't really want to, and I can't, and I can't help out, and I have to do my own thing actually the whole time. Yes, you can do that at home, but if you come to the monastery, you do the stuff that is required of you. Very easy. And that is, I can say that with a lot of compassion. Because I have compassion towards myself and towards the Sangha. And if you have people who think, oh, I'm in the Buddhist monastery, I need so much compassion now, actually, you have to look after me. No, we don't. We don't have to look after you. We don't have that compassion with you. It's a bad fit. You're coming to us. You're not going into a any sort of organization if you don't want to be there and do the stuff that they're doing. I know people come and we have breakfast from 6:30 to 7:15. People show up at 7:30 and make their own breakfast. Or the Anagarikas didn't even put out. It's just like, and then the Anagarikas put up with that stuff and have discussions for 2 hours with them. They should have come to me, would have taken me a minute. And I mean, this compassion thing, and being a Buddhist, can get into these weirdest directions, you know. This is sort of being so kind that you're just a pain in the ass the whole time, because it just smells of fear and fakeness and hypocrisy and I don't know what. And then on the other hand, you can be the absolute tough ass, it's just like calling it power and practice and sit meditation for 8 hours, and I'm not going to do this anymore, I'm not going to do that anymore, I'm going to have only 50 possessions, and really the absolute weird stuff people put on themselves, and that's then they're becoming Buddhist. So what it means to become a Buddhist is basically we do exactly what we think is right. We pick out the stuff, and then we're doing exactly the same things that we did before, just under a different name. And I think for me the only difference in Buddhism from the teaching aspect is what I don't find in other religions is, we have the kindness in Christianity and all the other religions. And
you have, usually you have a being in charge of the whole thing. That is different, obviously, in Buddhism. But what is really something new is the whole aspect of anicca, dukkha, anatta, that I don't find in other religions. A little bit on the anicca, the impermanence, this that nothing stays, that is in Christianity for the time being on earth, but then you have the eternal soul that stays for eternity with a benevolent God. Yeah, so basically that aspect only is for the physical aspect of the body, while in Buddhism is nothing, there's nothing permanent. There is no soul, permanent spark inside of us that stays the same the whole time. Is the whole thing is a coming and going of phenomena, of changes. And the dukkha aspect, the dukkha, the suffering, the unpleasantness of life, you have that in Christianity as well, but then it's about being on earth. And then after earth is this aspect of again going either to the eternal flame or being in being with the Lord for eternity in I think the Catholics, they have some different heaven realms as well, the cherubims, and I don't know what they have actually, so you can be a higher angel and lower angel and things like that, but that's it. That's for forever and ever and ever. If you're not happy there, you're really in trouble. So that aspect goes in Buddhism, goes through everything again. This is impermanence. This is not just for being on earth. This is that goes to every aspect of the mind. The mind itself, everything that we think we are, is impermanent. Everything around us, anyway, everything in the universe, as we know it from physics already, we have the beautiful thing of entropy, the second dynamic law. Everything is bound to disengage from each other. Every atom is basically disintegrating. And it has a tendency to do it. So that is the second aspect that is new. And then the third aspect, which is the for me a very lovely aspect. For a lot of people, they make a really big deal out of it, and they, I don't know, in my opinion, they don't understand it in the way they should understand it. It's the aspect of non-self. Of this not having this this soul, not having it's in Christianity, in lived Christianity, and also in if you're Muslim or the Hindus have it as well, you have this aspect of good and evil. It's basically the Americans, you're either with us or against us, we're the good guys. So basically, we fight for the Lord, and you have the things that went on in the Middle Ages, the Crusades. It was always they both thought they were fighting for the good thing. The Muslim and the Christians, they both thought they were fighting for the good cause, good and evil, and that is
all coming.
That microphone is cutting out a little bit, sorry. That's the sense of self, that it's basically, there was a long time Christianity, there was that discussion if everything is preordained. So you come into this world, and it's determined already. If you are a sinner, and you go down, or if you are a good person, you go to heaven. So they had different fractions who believed different things. And obviously some people saw the danger, because if you have the feeling I'm in that fraction that goes to hell anyway, you can do whatever you want. But there's no, that's very bad for any state who wants to stay in authority. But it was always this either or thing. And with this non-self aspect, it's not determined if you are a good person or a bad person. This is conditions coming together. And even if you grow up in difficult conditions, if you have the fortune of coming in contact with things that are more wholesome and develop them in your mind, then the mind becomes more wholesome. And if you have a good conditions in the beginning, but you're unfortunate and have come in contact with a lot of negative and brutal and false views, maybe even hurting people because you think it's good for a cause or for anything, for something, then it can go all the way down. Your mind can become really dark and unpleasant. So for me, that non-self aspect, at least in that aspect to watch it, is just that's beautiful. That gives me no responsibility at all, because I never chose in the first place. But on the other hand, it gives you this chance, and you still can't do what you want, because if you're clever, you know, if I do a lot of negative things, then my mind is going to get negative, and people are going to be negative towards me. And you feel it getting darker, especially when you're a meditator. You feel the unpleasantness rising, the more unwholesome your mind state becomes. And I find that that's a very... even if we can't see if that's true, what the Buddha said, I think it's still a very skillful way of looking at the mind. It's just like, wow, there's nobody at fault. This is this condition. My parents, my friends, my siblings, my society, my political views I was born in, the amount of wealth or poorness I was born in, the intellectual capability I was born with, the amount of brain cells, whatever determines that, the amount of openness I grew up with, or the restrictiveness. So, for me, that is a beautiful aspect in Buddhism, but that is for me taking something I can take refuge in, this non-self, this anicca dukkha anatta. This is that has some beauty to me when I contemplate that. The rest, all the little rules around it, and what people think is right or wrong, sometimes they get it right and sometimes they cause a lot of trouble for themselves. Even with the five precepts, you try to do your best, but it's not about being perfect. It's about developing a wholesome mind, and a wholesome mind, if it's wholesome enough, it might not want to drink alcohol anymore after a while. But I don't see why you can't be a Buddhist when you still have your glass of wine or whatnot. For me, that's not true. You cannot become a member of the Buddhist society, a permanent member, if you don't take the five precepts. That means if you still like your glass of wine from time to time, that would mean you cannot become a member of the Buddhist society. I think that is wrong. That is nonsense, actually. It should be an aspiration in the mind. It should be something you try to walk towards. But if you don't see certain aspects of it and follow them, that shouldn't be a reason for you not to be a Buddhist, obviously. You can be a Buddhist with a glass of wine. And don't say, and don't get me wrong, and don't quote me wrong, because I got in trouble before for this. And don't say Buddhists are allowed to drink wine and it's good for you and it's healthy. No, I didn't say that. I said basically that you can be a Buddhist and still not be perfect in the five precepts. Even you might not even accept but you stop drinking a glass of wine, and you can be a better Buddhist than a lot of people who keep the five precepts and don't drink any wine anymore, but they're still very unpleasant people. I guarantee you that. So put your priorities right, please. Just make sure that you take refuge in something that inspires you, that feels right in your heart, and not make it another just another something that you put over yourself. So we agreed today to stop at 15:15, that we can do a little circumambulation, a little ritual. Like it was said, if you know anything about Buddhism and like to participate, please go ahead. If you're new and you don't know what that's all about, we're walking 3 times around, is there even a Buddha statue there? Is a Buddha statue, okay. Oh, that one is going to go. Okay. Very good. So the Buddha statue is there, and it's a reminder and it's sort of a ritual to walk with your right shoulder towards the Buddha 3 times around, to like they do everything in Buddhism 3 times basically. So to make it sink in, and I hope that is okay for you, but you don't have to participate, like it was said, and maybe we get going. Thanks for you listening.